This season of the Future Great City podcast is sponsored by Red Brick Realty, a new full-service boutique brokerage firm focused on helping you buy and sell residential, commercial, and investment properties. Tell Red Brick you heard about them here on the Future Great City podcast, and you'll receive $500 off buying or selling a home, apartment building, or commercial property. You can reach Scott Sturdivant at 314-420-9491 or Scott at redbrickstl.com. This is the Future Great City podcast from nextstl.com. Welcome back to part two of our interview with St. Louis City mayoral candidate and president of the Board of Aldermen, Lewis Reed. He's run for mayor before, made it official in August, not too long ago, that you'll be running again. I always say this, but we're really going to run through some things. Soccer stadium, would you support public support for that, whether it's a TIF or absolutely. Tax abatement or land assemblage or something like that?
Absolutely. I think, you know, having Major League Soccer in the city of St. Louis, you know, with our geographic location, I think that's a no-brainer. How we get there is another point. What I'm pushing for is to make sure that it goes to the voted people, and I think we're going to get that done.
Okay. St. Louis City, either becoming part of the county, merging, whatever you want to call it.
Doesn't fix all our problems.
Sure.
That is not a magic wand, right?
So
but they have 91 municipalities, 91, 93 municipalities.
I'm sure
you lost count. And they can't come together, right?
Sure.
It doesn't fix our problems.
So do we do it? And then is it a benefit, but it doesn't fix our problems? Or we don't do it because it doesn't fix all of our problems?
Here's the way I like it. You remember when we were talking about NGA? Right. At first, you remember the original discussions on NGA and St. Louis County had a spot out
there? Yeah, they had two in St. Louis County.
They had two in Spain. What was it? And that's before anyone was talking about it. The Post-Dispatch came and said, what do you think about that? I said, number one, if we're going to work together with the county, there needs to be a no poaching clause anything we do, because we're not working together then, right? It's important that the city and the county work together. There are some things that we can do right now that are going to benefit people in the city and county, that gets us moving down that road. And taking advantage of those things today. There's cooperative agreements that can be put together between the city and the county.
And there are cities that do this. I mean, Cincinnati is the same geography. Pittsburgh's the same geography. And it doesn't seem like those cities are too wound up in mergers or consolidations, right?
Yeah.
So ultimately, though, if something comes to you that is done, that's packaged, that's legislated, are you in favor of it or not?
It's like one of these things, like when they wanted to merge the city and the county, because they said, well, it'll help our crime numbers.
Yeah.
But if you still live in the neighborhood where, you know, there's 15 murders in your neighborhood, 25 cars being stolen in your neighborhood, stores being robbed, it hasn't helped you one bit that the numbers are watered down. It actually hurts you, because now when we go for federal funding and things of that nature, for targeted programs related to public safety, now we have a higher bar to reach, because now we're not at that level.
It's starting to sound unlikely that you're going to push for something like this. I bring this up basically because the current mayor has been rhetorically a strong proponent of it, and I don't know that there's much happening, but he has said over and over again that it needs to happen, that the city needs to rejoin the county or something.
The main sticking point with the city joining the county is that the county looks to the city and says, you guys are trying to join us because you have all of those problems that you can't handle, can't fix, can't manage yourself. So why should we take them on? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, the city's going to have to manage and fix its problems, whether we're part of the county or not. Yes. We should not look to that as the end all be all, that fixes all our problems, because it's not. Mm-hmm. I know it's popular to say, but it's not. Now, if the county came and said, hey, you know, let's join together. All right, let's join together. Let's get it done. Right. But the mathematician in me won't let me buy into that, to say that, okay, this fixes all our problems, we're done.
Sure.
tap out. It does not. We still have to own our problems. We still have to address our problems as a community. Mm-hmm. And we have the brain power, we have the talent and everything within our city to do it. And we're going to partner with the county. We're going to partner with people in D.C. We'll partner with people in Joplin, Missouri, Kansas. It doesn't matter,
right? Yeah.
But it doesn't fix our problems. But if we do it, let's do it.
Okay.
But it's not going to fix it. No, it's not.
You're not going to push for it, though. It doesn't sound like this is going to be something that you're wanting.
What I'm going to push for are for jobs and opportunities and to address the massive public safety issues that exist in our city. That's a first more. Now, when you look at what it takes to do that, it takes business growth in the city, right? It takes investing in the talent that we have in our city, right? It's great to go and recruit and bring other talent to the city, but we really truly don't understand the talent that we have in our city, and we're going right. to get to that by more public-private partnerships and more engagement, right?
And a merger doesn't necessarily serve that purpose.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? But it doesn't. But if a merger happens and if there's, you know, people that is their thing, mm-hmm. and that's awesome. Like, for example, I enjoy cycling, right? And I know that it plays a role in the development and the connecting of communities, right? And it's sustainable, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, but does cycling solve our public safety issues?
I would say.
Yeah, of course you would say.
We'll do a cycling podcast sometime. We'll get on that. Yeah. I got you. And so let's go through a couple more things. North-South MetroLink, are you?
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay, that was easy. I should have had some of these easier ones.
Every reason. We need the state to belly up the bar and do more to help us.
Got you. And then are you aware, I know there's an effort that's just getting off the ground to do a bond issue that would secure LRA buildings, that would provide more funding to stabilize historic buildings in the neighborhood and kind of prepare them for development. Is that something you're aware of or in favor of?
I have not had an opportunity to go through it to understand the fine details of it. But, mm-hmm. you know, Alex, you know my history.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, if we can, you know, save these buildings, that's what we need to do. That's our mm-hmm. It's an asset that's huge and it's often overlooked.
Got you. So let's wrap up on crime. And this is maybe this is the downer to wrap up on. And it's at kind of tragic levels in this city. And somehow we've become pretty numb to it, I think. I think in, you know, Mayor Slay's second or third full year, we had 73 or 83 murders in the city. Still too many. Yeah. I think we were 180 last year. We're on pace to do that again. And it's something that I've, you know, I don't know what I can figure out, but I look at other cities that have specifically Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati, which are geographically about the same size, population about the same size, minority population about the same size, percent in poverty, education levels. They're very similar cities. And I think as of last week, you know, combined, I think Cincinnati had 50 murders, I think, so far. Mm-hmm. We're well past twice that.
Yeah.
What? I don't know. I don't expect you to have an answer, but what the hell is happening in St. Louis?
Yeah.
And how do we even start to address it? How do we get people, you know, residents to feel hopeful? And I'm not sure there's a number that's a victory or, you know, that it makes sense to say our goal is only 80 people being shot and killed in our city. It's a terrible, there's no good way to approach it. But how do we have some hope that these numbers are trending in the right direction instead of the wrong direction?
Well, you know, we get all the way back to your opening statement when you talked about measuring and having the data and understanding what things look like and what's going on. And I think that that's where the city's really lacking, right? If you look at what some of these other cities have done to be able to address some of the issues of public safety, you look at, how they've coordinated their nonprofits and services across sectors so that there is a delivery of those services so that people can get to those services they need. You know, with the way we're set up in the city, with not having a program in place so that we can connect a person to the need, right? So if your need is transportation and you don't have money for transportation, is there a program or a nonprofit out there that will help? Some people will know, but the vast majority of the people won't know. If you are a parent and your child has some health issue, right? How do you get to those services and what does that look like and what would you qualify for? I mean, there's so many things like that.
Examples we can follow. There are cities doing a better job.
There's examples, but we can create, we know right now that if we had a program that we were partnered with our St. Louis public school systems, right? Because they're connected to the child. They see a lot of things in the classrooms and the like. They knew which ones are living in transient situations that housing would help, which one's health care would help, which one needs an eye exam so they can actually see the board and do the homework, and they're suffering from headaches because, I mean, all of these things, right? If we partner with the schools and with our health department and our nonprofits, right, so that the schools and administrators within the schools understood what those programs were, we can begin to connect the people to the need at a certain level. That's one part. The other part.
But why isn't that happening today?
Because I think that it is just the system we live in. It's going to take leadership from the mayor's office to do that, because the nonprofits come to the mayor's office annually for their funding, and they want us to make sure that we send a letter to the feds and others to make sure that they can get their funding. They need letters from the mayor's office to go to businesses for investments, all of that stuff, right? But you have to have people on staff that understand what that nonprofit is delivering. And if you haven't measured and don't understand what's going on in the neighborhoods and communities, you have no idea. If you're over subscribed on certain services and undersubscribed on others, right? Where you can go to another city and say, okay, guess what? In New York, there's a program that does X, Y, or Z, and the way they put that program together was by partnering with other nonprofits and our education system and small businesses for funding, and the city provided match funding. All these things, right? We have to begin to look at things in a different way, but it has to be data-driven. We have to understand what these communities' populations like. And like I said, the first thing. Second thing is, we have to have some confidence in and some direct, deliberate programs to invest in these communities and invest in job training and bring in new opportunities out to these neighborhoods, right? And once you get it started, it begins to grow on itself, right? But you have to seed it, and you have to nurture it, and you have to continue to work within that community, and there has to be absolute buy-in from the community, otherwise it's rejected, right?
So I think a lot of people see that as one side of the problem of crime, right? The other side that people are more probably unfairly demanding of is just, how do we do the policing side, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm getting there.
Okay, all right.
I know it's taking a minute, but here's the thing. You know, when people ask about public safety, they want that feel-good, easy answer. And it's easy to give. I can sit here, and I'm sure you talk to the chief. He'll say, I'm going to put more police officers on the street.
Right.
And I'll cure your
problem. No, people are concerned about how many police officers there are.
You can put more police officers on the street, but I'm telling you right now, based on reality, that does not change.
Right.
That does not change it to the level people are talking about changing. We have to get in front of the problem, right? And the police are more of a response unit. Mm-hmm. We can use them to preventative measures.
The community measures. Is trying to rely on them more than we ever have, right? You expect them to prevent crime, which isn't what police do. So.
Exactly right. So, okay, so that's one thing. You're getting me off track.
We're going to break this into a three-part series or something.
Those are the two things. And then this last one, let me just jump to it, the piece that you want to hear more about. And that's on the policing side, right? Mm-hmm. We have to take a look at how we've been policing, absolutely 100%. You look at when Dotson came in 3 years ago, we've seen a spike in murders every year since then, right? And that's not coincidence. There are a number of programs that he eliminated when he came in office. He also moved to these mass big districts, going completely opposite of the cops program, where they said you should have, you know, smaller districts, you should have more community policing. But think about what you do when you move to mass districts and you do hotspot policing. Hotspot policing, we're bouncing these officers around to the hotspots. They're not engaging in the community. They're chasing hot spots around the city of St. Louis, opposed to building these tight-knit relationships with the community. And then they come back and say, okay, of the 180 murders in the city of St. Louis, we were only able to make arrests in, 20 of them. And of those 20 we made arrests in, we only have successful prosecution in 8 of them or something like that. The numbers are just crazy lopsided.
I think it's close to 50%, but it's bad. It's worse than a lot of communities.
It's upwards of 70%. 70-some-odd percent of the murders in the city of St. Louis are going unsolved. Now, what does that tell you? You're more likely to get your car booted and towed traffic ticket than you are if you commit murder in city of St. Louis. So that's a problem. Mm-hmm. We need targeted resources that we need to be, partnering with the feds and others to get to there. And there's some specific programs that we can put in place, like I said, and some of those were programs that the chief eliminated when he came in office, along with moving these big districts and everything else, that has led to this. Because now the community, if I don't know you, mm-hmm. and you show up at my door and say, can you tell me what happened at this murder next door to you? And you know that 20 other people in your community have gotten away with all kinds of things.
Right.
You're less likely to come forward with somebody you don't know.
No, it seems obvious there's a lack of trust. And this is not just in the city of St. Louis. It's a lot of places around our nation. But,
but
that's what happens over and over again, is that, the people killing others and the people dying in our city are overwhelmingly young black men. It's like 90 some percent of the perpetrators they can identify, and then also the murder victims are men from 20 to 35 years old. And there seems to be just an unwillingness or an inability, or they're probably acting rationally, that when they see someone get shot, they're not going to run and tell people, because they know that people aren't being caught, and that's become part of the culture.
And there's there's an erosion of trust there. So, the question becomes,
on itself. Yeah.
Yeah. So the question becomes, if we haven't done what must be done to create that bond of trust between the community and law enforcement or our court system and stuff, mm-hmm. Should our expectation be that we're going to get the cooperation? And I'd say we should not have an expectation that we're going to get the cooperation if we have not done what it takes to build that relationship, whether we're talking about public safety, whether we're talking about erecting a stop sign in the neighborhood. It doesn't matter, right? I think that bond is really important.
So Mayor Slay has called for Chief of Police Dotson to resign if he's running for mayor. So Dotson declared that he'll run for mayor. The current mayor has asked for him to resign. Other people have as well. What's your position on that issue?
I think that the chief has the law on his side, from best we can tell. Mm-hmm. I think
he's not required to resign. He can run for office if he wants.
He can run for office. Yeah. So I think that if the mayor really wants to make a difference now, is within his legal right to reassign him to something else. But if the mayor fired
him,
then the chief,
give him something else.
And if he really wanted to fire him now, he has the last 3 years, ever since the chief's been in control of the largest department in city government and 1/3 of the city's budget, that every single year the murder rate has increased. So his job performance can't be all that great. Right. So if the mayor really wanted to do something, do that. Right.
And if you were mayor, would you call on him to resign? I mean, would you?
Oh, if I was the mayor, I would. If the minute he said he was going to run, I said, number one, first thing, 3 years after we've seen the murder rate increase, last year when we were looking for additional officers and to find out that they were sitting on 115 open positions. And you think about this, all the years that the city's been a city. Right. All of the data that we have that tells us, OK, this is the average attrition rate in the city of St. Louis within public safety. So based on that attrition rate, we can probably pinpoint within a week of when we should have to open up a new academy. Mm-hmm. And if we haven't done that to the tune of 115 open positions, and then we come back and say, oh, well, we need more officers. And then the board happens to find out that we had 115.
So you would have fired him before he announced.
Oh, there were tons of reasons.
he would have been gone already. It wouldn't be a conflict.
Yeah,
there
are tons of reasons. Yeah.
Okay, so let's end on something a little more fun. I watched your campaign announcement video. In the opening scene, you're riding your bike. You've mentioned you're a cyclist. You're riding to a Metrolink station. You take credit for opening the first dog park in the city. Are you pandering to millennials? Are you the millennial candidate? Is this what you're going for?
No, I'm not.
Bikes, transit, dogs.
I'm not pandering. Just telling my record. Just telling what I've done.
You're claiming you're an old millennial. Is that what you're saying?
What, you call me
old?
I
don't know what millennials even mean. I don't even know what that means.
There are a lot of millennials that don't ride bikes. A lot of millennials
I saw a baby boomer on a bike the other day.
Really?
Yeah, it was interesting.
Scary.
I know. I steered clear of him, but
No, Alex, no, these are things that I've done. This is my record, right? They let my record speak for itself. Bike St. Louis, when I started Bike St. Louis, you would have been mortified by just the little, you know what we had back, just those little green signs, and it had a bike on it, right? And they sprinkled those around the city and said, oh, okay, we're ready for cyclists. And
it's if you end up being mayor, I'm going to come back to you about Bike St. Louis, because I'm a little bit mortified about its current status.
I agree. We can talk on that. I agree. I think that
that's on my list of things I didn't bring up. Bike St. Louis is not great.
Here's
this is a great biking city. It's a great place to ride your bike, but we need help.
Think about this. Okay, Bike St. Louis. You know, obviously programs they go on. You know, the cycles, right?
Sure.
Under some of the things that they're working on doing now. You know, if I was still involved, I would push them different direction, right? Obviously. But if you look at what Bike St. Louis has done, right? You know, we have these interconnected routes around the city that we were light years away from and would have never approached. Today, we'd still just have those green signs because
People use them. You have signs that say, you know, 2.1 miles to Soulard Market or 1 mile to Tower Grove Park. And I see people on my rides using them. They stop and they look at the signs and they know where they are in the city. They're not a bad thing at all.
It's a nice asset. Not only that, now we have these interconnected routes to the metro stops and things. Mm-hmm. And if you like Alex, if you look at it through the eyes of a young urbanist like yourself that live in the city of St. Louis, you know more about the development in the city of St. Louis than probably a lot of the people at the Board of Aldermen, the development agency, because this is what you do, right? So you understand it and you're looking at it through those lenses. But if you looked at that whole thing through a different lens, you look at it through someone who may want to live in the city, right? Who's looking at the city as a place to live. And you say, okay, what is cycling like in that city, right? And you get online and you find a map to Bike St. Louis. And you say, wow, look at those interconnected routes. And this
I would challenge you to find a map of Bike St. Louis online right now.
No, it's online.
It's a large PDF that isn't very...
It's not friendly for sure. Or if you're touring the city, right?
Right.
And you're a cyclist, now you have access to that. Or if you are just getting into it, like not like you and I, we've done this for eons, so none of this is new to us. We would get out there and make a route where there wasn't any. The routes and the designated routes are for people who wouldn't
exploring and they don't want to be lost in the city. They want to be on a route. I think it's a good thing.
And also for the motorists.
Right. It tells them that there are bikes in this area. Yeah. You know, watch out for it. I think what happened and what you said, it rings very true on so many levels that programs go up and down. And that's true everywhere to some extent here. So much of what the city seems to do is based on a grant. So they get a grant to do a sustainability plan. They get a grant to do Bike St. Louis. It becomes a thing. They had a grant to do open streets, mm-hmm. which open streets is something that's become permanent, where they open the street to all users that aren't driving a car.
Excellent.
And these are celebrated events in so many cities across our country, and so many places have found a way to continue doing them. And when I ask about this in our city, it was, the grant ran out. I'm sure it did. Yeah. You know, your job is to figure out how to make these things that are so successful and so popular in so many places and here continue. That's harmful when things kind of come up and down and up and down.
Look at Bike St. Louis. Bike St. Louis didn't come about because there was a grant for it. Not at all. There was not one penny, one dime allocated to say, okay, this is a federal grant for bike cycling. Not at all. I was sitting over in Squires, Lafayette Square, having a cup of coffee, and after riding and, you know, getting, you know, almost run off the road right at Lafayette and Jefferson, right? And I saw that green sign. And I said, we can do a better job at marking these routes and having a holistic biking plan that interconnects our parks, our other transportation options, whether it's the bus line, metro, and so on and so forth. And it can make a difference in our city, right? So I took $10,000 from ward money that I had. And then I went and lobbied each and every alderman to match that. Some of them said, people don't ride bikes in my ward, so I'm not going to put in. And I kept going back to him. And then we put a pool of money together. We went to Great Rivers Greenway at the time, who now has changed the name, and said, look, here's where we're at. I have money in, and I have these other aldermen that are willing to put money in. Will you guys not only put money in, but will you guys dedicate resources and time and staffing to help identify these routes, measure them, and understand
and
how
was,
we should structure
them. This was TrailNet, right? Not Great Rivers Greenway? Or was it?
No, it was Great Rivers Greenway back in the day. Yeah, David Fisher. Yeah, so David said, Alderman Reed, I'll do it. I said, great.
All right, it's time for you to rally the troops and get that reinvestment. Because, I think it's great. But, there has to be some permanence to it. And one thing I've tried to do, and I wish I had the time to do this in a systematic way, is that, I wear spandex when I ride my bike. I have a fancy bike. I don't particularly love bike lanes. I can ride if they're there, if they're not there.
Well, you're a sophisticated cyclist, though.
Thanks. Yeah. But as I ride through the city, you see people who are obviously using their bikes as transportation. I use it because it's fitness and it's fun, and it does save me money. I don't have to drive my car and deal with that frustration. But there are lots of people. No, we're going to talk about that. But we're not going to talk about that. We're going to wrap this up, I swear. But you see people who need a bicycle for transportation, and you see the statistics across the north side where I think there's at least 23%, I think was the last stat I saw, of households that do not have access to a car. Mm-hmm. And there's buses and things, but it's an imperfect system, and I know there's a stigma about riding bikes sometimes out of necessity. Everyone wants to have a car, and in some cases you have to have one in the city. But you see people over and over again, and I keep thinking, and when I see them, I try to, if I can safely do it, take a picture and say, please build a bike lane for this person, not for me.
Yeah.
Build it for the person, who we call it salmoning, riding the wrong way on the wrong side of the road down Jefferson because they want to see the cars that are about to hit them, right? Yeah. There are people out here who need this, and they really don't have a voice, and I don't think our advocacy organizations have done a good job identifying them, because when you go out and do surveys, you get either the 50 or 60 year old recreational cyclist who has all the gear, but they cruise through the city, right? Or you get people like me who ride through the city as fast as I can and probably piss off drivers sometimes and stuff, right? Like I'm a particular type of rider. I don't try to piss people off, but you miss all these people who really would benefit from feeling safer on their bike, and they're loaded up with groceries. They're taking their kids places and stuff like that. So hopefully we can get to that point. Maybe you'll be that mayor. So
I will be that mayor. Here's the thing, Alex, it's not something I have to make up or try to do or try to remake myself to be. This is who I am. Right. Built the first dog park in the city of St. Louis, because why? There was a need for it, and it represented an amenity that we needed to deliver for our families in the city. A cycling, why did I do that? It would've been easy for me to just continue to take that route just like you have, right? But when you look at it, you say, you know what? We could be a better city because of it, right? And these things come. You have to have the willingness to work on them, to get them done. And I think it has to come from within. And if it's not, the success will be limited, because that is not your passion. That's not where you're trying to take us.
So if anyone listening to this wants to engage Lewis in a long conversation, bring up cycling, talk about your bike. We can talk bike routes. We can do this for a very long time. So but it's your passion for it is obvious and it's genuine. So I appreciate all of that. And like I said, we could go on forever. We're going to wrap up. Thanks so much for joining us, and good luck this coming year.
All right. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you to Red Brick Realty, the new full-service boutique St. Louis brokerage firm. Give Scott a call at 314-420-9491. And get $500 off by mentioning the Future Great City podcast when you close a deal with Red Brick. You can subscribe to this podcast via RSS feed or on iTunes, and can follow the site on Twitter at NextSTL. Thanks for joining us. Be informed, be engaged, be part of what's next. NextSTL.com.